More baristas are actually asking for raises and figuring out how to leverage what they can offer a business. And it's almost a little shocking for some owners. And I love it. I love the idea that they know what value they can bring. And so now it's a real negotiation.
Hello, friends, and welcome or welcome back to episode 98 of the Valor Coffee Podcast. How we have arrived at 100 episodes is completely beyond my small brain's comprehension. But this week, we sit down with someone who has recorded way more than 100 podcast episodes, and that is Chris DeFurio of Keys to the Shop. Chris is a veteran of 20 plus years in the coffee industry. He has a podcast with over 700 episodes and a consulting business where he just flies around the country and helps coffee shops with operations, management, so on and so forth. You can tell from this episode that Chris knows what he's doing way more than me and the guys who are just seemingly babies in this industry after this chat. So we basically conned Chris into an hour of free consulting, and we shot him many questions about operations, mainly focused around the topic of barista wages. We really want to increase our barista wages. Many baristas out there want their wages increased, obviously. So we chatted with him about how that can be possible in an industry that isn't super cash flow positive. Chris has much more experience than us with this, and he was able to honestly give us some things that we're really going to take away. I know I'm going to listen to this episode several times and take notes. So we hope it is as helpful for you as it was for us. What I failed to mention just then is that this episode was recorded in Chicago at SCA Expo. Our friends Prequel Cafe let us use their space. So shout out and thank you to Prequel. We had a great time at Expo. It was all of our first times, talking specifically the Valor folks here, but we will definitely be back every year. So if we met you at Expo, it was amazing. Thank you for coming out to see us at Third Wave Water. We just want to say that we really appreciate you for continuing to listen to this podcast, purchasing our coffee, so on and so forth. Want to make you aware that we have partnered with Clive Coffee. So Clive sells espresso machines, grinders, accessories, parts. Go to Clive using the link down below and use Valor5 as your discount code, Valor5, and you will receive 5% off Eureka grinders and Luca espresso machines. 5% whenever you're spending maybe thousands of dollars goes a long way. So here it is. Here's our episode with Chris DeFurio from Keys to the Shop. Thanks for listening. Chris, we're stoked to be doing this. Happy to be here.
Where are we?
Yeah, where are we? We are at SCA Expo in Chicago, Illinois.
Oh yeah.
At Prequel Cafe. Thank you, Prequel, for allowing us to use your space. It's huge. And without you, we would have been doing this on the showroom floor, kind of like sitting over in the concession area. So
that's true.
This is nice. This is nice. But sitting here with you is awesome. You were just talking about coffee events that you went to 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And that's amazing.
20 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been in it for 25 years now. Coffee. Wow. And thanks for having me.
For those of you, I guess, on both sides, we should probably just introduce ourselves.
Yeah, right? Oh, please.
So I'm Riley. This is Ross.
Hey, I'm Ross. In case you're just listening. Ross Walters, Valor
Ethan.
Coffee. Hi. Hi, everybody.
We're from Valor Coffee. We're a coffee roaster with a couple cafes just north of Atlanta. And we have a weekly podcast where we talk some nonsense every single week. And a few months ago, we kind of got together and said we wanted to do a collab episode.
Yeah.
So who are you?
I'm Chris DeFurio, and I run Keys to the Shop podcast. That's been going for 7 years now. And this is my 25th year in specialty coffee, from, the baby barista all the way to lots of positions in cafes. And now consulting and podcasting full time, and drinking coffee at the SCA. Yeah.
Nice.
What's one of the better coffees you had this weekend?
Oh gosh. I really appreciated Cat and Cloud's espresso today. I always like their coffee. Mm-hmm. And I always try to espresso for every place I go. And my shots at Metric this morning were great. Big fans of their coffee. And then actually tea, Volition Tea here in Chicago had, you didn't ask about tea, but she had this green tea that was steeped in gin barrels, which was up for a new product, like a consumable a consumable product award or something this year at SCA. So that was really delicious, actually.
And those are, I guess that would be non-alcoholic though, but soaked in gin barrels?
Yeah, yeah. I could taste a little bit of the ginniness in it, I guess.
Ginity.
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah, I would agree on Cat and Cloud. We got to meet the folks from Cat and Cloud for like the first time this weekend, and they're like our coffee idols. So that was really, really cool for us.
Yeah.
Truby, if you're listening,
hey, we know you are.
Mark, hey, Michael, hey, Dulce, hey.
So to hang out with them, and because we wouldn't have a podcast if we wouldn't have been listening to their podcast before.
Very true.
Or a business at all. They taught us a lot. So
Wow. Yeah, they're great. And that's one of the things about the SCA show is I think I heard 16,000 people were registered to come this weekend, but everybody you see, about 1 out of 10 people, even if you don't know anything, you know a little bit, you'll see somebody like kind of famous in coffee. And you're like, oh, that's that. And that the, from the video and the company, and it's so overwhelming and fun. So,
Last thing we'll say, we're definitely not drinking coffee right now. And it's because I think we're all coffeed out. So there will not be a coffee review on this podcast. Yeah. Definitely not.
I don't think I can really consume anything but water for the next like while.
Until the after party.
Until the after party at La Marzocco tonight.
Totally. Cool. Transparently, I think, just to spell out how we landed on our topic, we got on a Zoom and just kind of riffed for a minute a few months back. And we kind of landed on this topic that was relevant for us at the time of how can we as leaders of a coffee shop, owners of a coffee shop, look at our barista wages, our barista hourly pay, and realistically map out a plan for how to see those increase over time. And it's, I think it's a very relevant topic because we see, especially now, a lot of with some bigger companies like unionization and some, you know, people just, I mean, honestly, I don't know another word other than disgruntled with how they're being paid because they a lot of times can't afford their rent as a barista.
Sure.
Yeah. So we landed there and I thought it would be cool, especially us as owners of a cafe or two cafes and a roastery with around, you know, 20 plus employees, to talk about this with you, someone who has infinitely more experience than us and helps other people with things like this all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. When we first started, I remember, one of the things I was most excited about was having employees.
Okay.
Right.
I'm sorry to laugh, but I no, continue.
It's the perfect response. I remember telling my father-in-law that, who owned a hearing aid business. He was the only guy around that I knew who owned a business. And when I told him that when I was 19 years old, he was like, why? And I was like, but because I worked in cafes at the time, and that's how I got into coffee, was just working at other coffee shops, of course. And I loved it, but I saw all the ways that it could have been better. Mm-hmm. And I saw some ways, not all the ways, some ways that my experience as an employee could be better. And so I was just simply like, we're going to do it right. You know, like we're going to do it the right way. We're going to right every wrong that we've ever had. And like, you know, kind of be inspired of what not to do. And I think even in that time, I remember thinking like, man, baristas are so underpaid, you know, like it's, making coffee is such a beautiful craft that deserves to be at the same wage as a tradesman or something like that. Mm-hmm. And those were 19, 20 year old thoughts, maybe 18 years old is when I first started. And now fast forward now to owning a business, the reality of the numbers of a coffee shop tell a different story. Like I wish I could have had a conversation with myself back then of like some of the reality of what barista wages are and aren't. And the only other thought there is I've been talking to a lot more people in different parts of the country about their staff and like what they pay their baristas. And I was just chatting with someone in, I forget which part of Canada, but in Canada, and just the minimum wage is so different all throughout the US. It's, I believe, 725 in Georgia. And where this guy was, I think it was something like 16.
Wow.
And yeah. I was just, that's over double.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just kind of perplexed by all that. And like, I love to explore some of that too, of like the impact of, we don't have to get into the politics of minimum wage or anything, but these are real realities that cafe owners face. They're good intention. They care about their staff. They want to give baristas careers in the coffee industry, but there's these like numerical hurdles that they have to find solutions to. So let's find all the solutions on this right podcast.
That's what we're here for.
Yeah, yeah. We'll figure it out.
No, it's good.
We're at SCA. So no questions, just things on my mind, you know, that I feel like have surfaced over just my career in the coffee industry.
Yeah, that was a really eye-opening experience getting to really soak in the global presence of this weekend. I was like, whoa, I'm meeting people from all over the world. So I got to talk to some guys from Australia over at Code Black. Awesome people.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about like cafes and volume and prices. And I was like, yeah, I mean, for a long time, espresso is like $3 in where we are. And he's like, oh, espresso is like over $5 in Australia. I'm like, oh my gosh, it's mm-hmm. like just different. And then talking to people in California that as just like a barista make more than I make as an owner, but I'm in Georgia. And it's like, whoa, okay. Mm-hmm. But it's like they're having a hard time paying their bills and I'm having a hard time paying my bills. Sure. You know, it's the global or just like the different places aspect is really interesting. So I feel like it's hard and maybe we'll just have to play it by ear as we're talking, but it's like, you know, not a number isn't the same, doesn't carry the same weight totally. In every same place,
mm-hmm.
like cost of living and other mm-hmm. factors. And we definitely, at least, I mean, Chris is probably nearing expert category, but we do not come to you as experts, but
we have more questions.
Humble, yeah. Humble servants looking to learn and share our thoughts and our few years of experience of having a team and trying to really spread the wealth, you know, and figure out like how, because who wants to have a business where you can't take care of your people?
Yeah.
Darn it. You know, well, I mean, that was such a big part of why I want to start too, is like, I want to have a, mm-hmm. coffee shop and I can give careers to people, like people can like work here for a long time. I want that. And that is possible for some, and then there's some where this is like a transitionary job. So a lot to explore.
Yeah, so maybe we can just start with, what do you think the owner's, you know, general responsibility is in this area, between, you know, I guess even the idea of, should an owner sacrifice for a period of time indefinitely, or is there just an answer that we don't see, that's where everyone can make $100,000 a year and you can have a staff of 20?
Yeah, that's not possible. No, sorry.
Dang it.
Even with robots?
Even with robots. And well, you know, temporarily, when you look at models that are just infused with cash from the very beginning, kind of artificially promoted as like a stable, like a venture capital backed entity that pays everybody this massive wage, that's an illusory kind of sustainable career there, because eventually those people's jobs will be cut and the quality won't be there. And the actual experience of that space will go down for most people because it's not a very relational place. It's a little bit more transactional by and large. I mean, there might be exceptions to that, but your idea of making $100,000 and everyone makes that, obviously, is not going to happen. It's just a starting point of culture of what coffee is seen as a commodity, and the fight for specialty coffee has always been, let's try to professionalize it, let's specialize it, let's make it like wine, which it has its own momentum from a lot of, you know, industry development that we don't have in coffee. And coffee is still sort of like the poor man's beverage, or the luxury that even, you know, somebody coming off of the street can get. You don't have to be budgeting for your coffee, most places it's still accessible, right? And so the perception limits what we can do with coffee. And that's why it's the same across the board. In Australia, it's proportionally the same if you translate all the nuances from Australia over to, you know, Alpharetta, Georgia, the cost of goods and the what people are willing to pay for coffee and what they're getting paid to it that lets them afford $5 for an espresso, just the general public.
Yeah.
It's just incremental. It's not right to look at that and say, well, we should do it because the Australians do it. You've got to mind your business, really your business. And you guys are doing that. And at the same time, your responsibility is to innovate for what you are doing. And even today on the show floor, I was thinking about this, like so many shop owners have a desire to see innovation happen in parts of the business of coffee that they have no business in. So like learning a lot about, and it's fine to learn about supply chains and what's happening on the farm, and you should know things about that. But the drive and urgency for innovation and models for helping accomplish maybe a fraction of what you want to do by, you know, this idea of, I love the idea of having employees, I want to make careers. That's where the energy needs to be. And when you get that right, I think you end up with, you know, profit sharing models, or we're going to talk about this probably, but ways to organize your team so that people are rewarded for doing more work with a leaner team instead of a large team, all paid what you can, but they're all doing like one singular thing. So I think an owner is somebody who innovates ways to pay themselves and pay others so everyone is taken care of. So don't sacrifice your well-being as an owner, because that becomes a toxic habit, and people pay themselves last so long into it that they end up getting burned out. And then guess what? They close and nobody has a job now. So you've got to take care of yourself. You've got to thrive in the business, and you've got to take care of other people. And if you want to take care of people, you have to take care of yourself as well. And unfortunately, as an owner, you're the bad guy. That's another thing that you're up against. So there's a few thoughts there that we can explore, but I really like the idea of holding with an open hand the idea that there's this ideal that you're going to do. I'm going to change the world. Means you're going to maybe make 10% of that happen or 5% of that happen. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I think us having that realization that maybe we're starting from a historically negative perspective of being the owner, you know, whether we have an amazing team, but I think there's just kind of a systemic way that we view authority or leadership, like skeptically, with a skepticism. Yep. And so that has really pushed us to be as transparent as possible with our team. And so going to them and being like, hey, this is how much money I make, and this is how much I work, and like we're not paying you what we're paying you because we're stuffing our pockets over here, you know. And maybe that's the case for someone, and if that's you, you know who you are. But for us, it's like, I think that realization hit, and it's been fun to be like, man, we really have tried to run this business with as much honor and care as possible. So it's good to pull back the curtain and be like, hey, come take a look. Like at our last all staff that we had, we were like, hey, just give you some perspective. Right now we're spending just about every dollar that's coming in, you know. It's not like this is going into our yacht fund. Even though, I mean, the yacht fund's at zero, but it'll
exist though.
But it's there.
Yeah, we started it, you know, one day.
That's the start.
But I feel like that's been a really fun solution, or like positive solution to that. Like the owner can be the bad guy pretty quick, you know, but if like, if you're running your business with any semblance of honor or respect, it's like, yeah, just let the people know.
Yeah.
Don't hide behind a curtain.
Can I say something about that?
Please.
I think the, transparency is obviously great. And we always say on the show, pay what you can, not what you can get away with. And they represent two different mentalities. If you say, this is what we can do, we want to be as generous as possible, and our goal is to pay you as much as possible, and when we can't pay you, we want to reward you, for your work as much as possible. If I trust, and that's a huge currency, is trust, that you have my best interest in mind, then the monetary aspect becomes not the singular focus. When trust isn't there, money is the only thing that you have to trust. Mm. And if you don't have that, then you have nothing. And I've worked for places that I've loved working and didn't make a lot, but I was fine working there versus places I hated where I was just like, give me my paycheck and get me out of here. So it's kind of a multivariate problem, but I would not apologize for being an owner or paying yourself. And even if you make more than what the baristas make, that's your business. And I think it needs to be said, and especially baristas who become owners eventually figure this out, it's okay to make money on a business that you start, because without you, there would be no business. And you have the most risk involved. I have clients who have their houses on the line for their business, literally. And yeah, barista work is great work. I've spent so many years, over a decade of being, you know, barista behind the bar. And I would love to call that a career, but the constraints of our culture are not things that you should try to solve by trying to just, I don't know, be falsely humble. Like, you have created something and you deserve the fruits of your labor, but being generous towards your people and involving them in that is also a proof of your character and your virtue. And I think that goes farther than simply the transactional. So trust is what I think kind of makes everything a little bit softer, rather than making it such a harsh, like, money equals happiness. It just isn't the case.
How do you think you set that up from the jump with people? Because I think a lot of times it's, I don't know a word for it other than ignorance to the coffee shop model that, you know, just because the bottom line at a publicly traded coffee company looks really good, that doesn't equal small independent coffee shop having a bottom line that's even above, you know, 1-3% of net profit. So is there a way to educate about the reality of the coffee shop model upon hiring someone, and like what it actually looks like to be a barista long term?
I mean, sure. You could say it exactly the way we've been saying it is this is, I would always encourage people to do what I know. I had Christopher Ferran on the show when he was still with Phoenix Coffee in Cleveland, and they had a transparent wage model that showed you just where you can go in the company. And that was their duty to track your progress as a barista and not forget that you were up for a raise when it was due. Or, you know, if it's performance-based and aptitude-based, that you accomplished that. So you have to give people a lay of the land and say, now that you work here, there might be a cap for how much a barista makes at Valor or at Phoenix or whatever. And because we've thought about that. And most people don't think about that long term because they get the coffee shop opened up and that's like, we're done. All right, now we're going to just like try to make a lot of money. But the planning process is not there. So I'd say, talk to them about what it looks like. But you have to know what it looks like before you talk to them. Right. Mm. So that'd be the first thing. And I would be careful of trying to plead your case to your staff as if it's their problem, because it's your problem. And as the owner, you do absorb the responsibility to make things happen that you promise will happen, the wages that you want to give them. By inviting them in and being transparent, you're also giving them an education on business. So that's helpful. It's treating them like adults, but it can go too far where it becomes what we call like a toxic vulnerability. Like, we really want you to pity us.
Yeah.
You know, and then you'll shut up.
It's like, that was a shortcoming or an extreme that I was thinking about when I'm talking about transparency, is you can really start to victimize yourself and be like, look how horrible my life is. So you know that you're not allowed to complain to me because I have it actually worse.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, that's really something.
The funny thing about being an owner is that pretty much anything that happens, the responsibility falls back on.
Yeah. You. That's what I was going to say too, of like, there's something to, it's on you because it's up to you to have a smart situation.
Yeah.
Cause say like you signed a lease that's $120 a square foot and you really shouldn't be paying that. And now your rent is like 20% of your whole thing. And you're like, sorry, guys, we don't have enough money. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, dude, you shouldn't sign that lease.
And for us, I mean, you could even spin it in a way of like, we started a coffee company with three people. So like, that's our, right. that's our responsibility to grow our company at least to a place where it can be sustainable for us and
people
and for our people.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was talking to Jared from Cat and Cloud about that yesterday. Cause I was like, how do you do it? Like, how do you have four cafes? Cause two is really hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's awesome, but it's hard. And, he was just kind of talking about that. And then I think you asked, like, you know, when you guys started with three people, did you know that like you have to get to this certain point to make it work? And they were like, yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so that was the plan all along. But sometimes we'll talk to some people that, you know, they'll be saying they want to have one little independent cafe and it's going to have six owners or something like that. And we're like,
Mm-mm.
Well, I mean, I guess if you want to like kind of.
You want to be the entire staff?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. Maybe.
Maybe.
I'm curious, you've mentioned the word models a couple times in what you're saying. And I think that's been a pretty big subject of our thought with scaling our business from one to two locations.
Yeah.
Is what is our model for the staff and what are the roles at play? And like you mentioned profit sharing. And I'm wondering in your time of consulting and just in your career, what are some of the different viable models you've seen work? I realize each cafe is pretty different,
yeah.
but at the same time, they're not in some ways. So, you know, for example, for us, like when we opened our two locations, our plan was to have a general manager in both locations. So one in each, and then one assistant manager under each of those general managers.
Yeah.
So in one location, there'd be a GM, an assistant manager. And then under the assistant manager and the GM is what we call point, which is a dollar raise per hour. And you're the point person, you know, you're the manager on duty, shift leads.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ethan is the retail director over the two cafes, you know, the leader of those leaders. And we pretty quickly realized and at our all staff, like he was mentioning, like we're way too top heavy.
Yeah.
And we got over ambitious with championing the cause of giving people careers in coffee that were kind of making us bleed money wise. So,
which is putting everyone at risk.
Like yes.
What Chris was saying.
Yes, exactly. So we have the chance now that there's been some transition with those people to go back to the drawing board of what exactly is our model of the leadership for these cafes. And if we open more, you know, how do we set ourselves up for success in putting the right people in place to run those and paying them the right amount? So, yeah, just back to that, you know, what are those different models that you've seen
mm-hmm.
work with leadership in cafes?
I think the principle here, of course, there's all sorts of things you can do to incentivize people. Well, and I don't even like using the word incentivize because you want to hire kind of motivated people already to be there. But to reward people with like benefits like healthcare and you know, discounts on gym memberships and paying them well and that mm-hmm. kind of thing. And of course, Cat and Cloud does the profit sharing with their staff as well. I believe after a certain point of employment or a number of hours accrued. So there's things you can do there, but you were mentioning the top heavy nature of your business as something that you installed because it sounded really good to do that. You created these careers and they disappeared
yeah.
because they were on paper, but they didn't, your business did not need it. Mm-hmm. And I think if you're a student of your business and what you're creating, you have to go down the line and say, what does it look like for this menu to be made for this number of hours a day,
right.
365 days a year? Now who needs to be there? And usually it's not that many leaders, and especially not that many shift leads. Oftentimes it's almost like everyone's a shift lead at some time, which means no one's a shift lead. So the minimum amount of leadership is usually the best idea, because ideas tend to kind of, you get a telephone game going, you have too many people to keep track of, and what you set out to accomplish starts to, you start putting out fires within your leadership team, And they were supposed to be there to keep things on track. And now it's a bigger problem than it ever was before. So the model I like to do is say, well, does the business need this role? Do you need a trainer, or has the manager got enough leeway to train people and onboard them? One manager per cafe as a central figurehead of the authority of the business, like the values of your business, a representative authority, is the model that I think almost every cafe should have, unless you've got like a full kitchen and back area that needs its own leadership. But even then, those people have respect for their positions, right? They're not going to cross over. A GM is somebody who's over more than one cafe and often more than one concept. And so they're the general manager of not only the retail of the cafe, but also the kitchen. And they're a little bit more on the admin side of things. And so you get to interact with the GM, who then interacts with the managers. And maybe there's some a shift lead or two, but I want to know who my boss is. It's back to trust. If I, the top heavy nature of most coffee bars is based on being safe. But as a barista, I don't feel safe when I can't communicate to somebody that matters. And if you don't matter, and I know it ends with you, I keep everything to myself. Your productivity goes down, your sales go down because everyone's not having a great time. And so the model is get present authority in a minimum dose with maximum optimization for their role and reward them well so that it's really hard for them to leave that job. Treat them well and train them, you know, pay them, and they might leave. But the good news is that you've developed this role that now you can feel easier when they do leave. And that's what most people are afraid of. They're afraid of, well, what if a manager leaves? You're not really doing this for the person. You're doing it for the role. So if you hire the right way, you'll have people that can fill that role, but you don't need to have like six managers if you have two shops. And so that's what I like to do is just keep it, take away stuff. When I was training latte art, it's similar. When people try to pour latte art, they're doing way too much. You got to pull back a little bit. Stop wiggling the pitcher so much. Loosen your grip on it. Let it flow. It wants less than you want to give it. And with authority in the cafe, I think it's similar. So that's at least where my mind goes to that question.
Thank you for that coffee example to really tie it together.
Yes. Yeah.
My brain only understands coffee. So
what I really like about that is the idea of like leadership clarity that you were saying and I can attest to this in our, like, this manager's around. And so there's basically three people you can reach out to about something. And I feel like the wires just get crossed nonstop. Yeah. But it's like, if I was working somewhere, like I talk to Ethan point blank. If I need something, I talk to him. And that really does open up a lot more. And maybe instead of like, I talked to this person, but that was not the content they needed. So they relay to it. They relay it to me. So now it's telephone and like slight processing, like, hey, this person needs to talk about this. Mm-hmm. And then you have to have come to them directly. And then you've like created a lot more time and waste, basically, frustration on that person's
own. I'm wasting my time, and I know it if I'm a shift lead and I don't do any leadership. And I feel like I'm not, like, I have this title, but I feel foolish because everyone knows that I really don't do anything except for try to keep the wheels from falling off. And that's what everyone's doing. So if you have fewer leaders, you also have more opportunity to reward the leaders you do have with the money you saved by not giving a dollar more per hour to somebody whose role was a little too shallow, right? So if somebody does more and is rewarded more, they get the benefit of pride in their work. They are more likely to get this dopamine hit, like, man, I am rendering good work to this craft. And it's not my business, but your work goes with you. Even if you were a manager at Valor and then you go on to get out of coffee, you learned a lot of life lessons in that time. And it was a comfortable job. I mean, they paid me very well. It was hard, but hard doesn't mean toxic, you know? hard work is hard. We might be drained at the end of a day, mm-hmm. but if it was in a good cause with people I love and we did good work and I know I feel proud, that's great. It's okay. So one of the things I do with people when we do an assessment of a cafe is we talk to everybody, like interview the baristas. And I just ask a lot of questions. Like if this happens in the cafe, who do you talk to? Like first, who's your boss? How does this get? And oftentimes the wires do get crossed. Like, I don't know. We just kind of like make the call. And you know, when wires get crossed, people shut down, they isolate, gossip starts, insurrections happen. And then you get a lot of the unionizing efforts that you're talking about before, because hands-off leadership and distant, absent leadership and lack of trust breeds discontent. And a lot of times these baristas really are making these calls in a vacuum. Yeah. And then when people are just like, well, you know, I can't believe this is happening, but it's been a seed that's been sown for a long time. Mm-hmm. And so cultivation of the trust comes back to that every time.
So to pivot just a little bit, we, at our last all staff that Ethan was talking about, we were kind of laying out, you know, the idea of wanting to raise wages across the board and how we can get to that point. And we brought up a statistic. All my Valor people, I love you. I'm not calling anyone out by doing this. Just go with me here. We pulled up Christmas Eve, and on Christmas Eve, we had a pretty stacked team behind the bar of like people who had been with us for longer, who had more experience, and also just leadership and Ethan being like, all right, guys, we're just going to go super hard all day, start top to bottom, start to finish. And the numbers of, you know, long tickets compared to another Saturday, I think it was a four man and woman team on Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
And then like a Saturday from the previous month was a six person team. And so we looked at those two, and Christmas Eve had like more average sales per hour and less long tickets. And so it kind of sparked this conversation between us, and I was kind of telling you about it, of how can we take that information and say, okay, maybe we were a little, I don't know, overzealous with, you know, we're getting busier, more people are coming through the door, we got to add more people behind the bar. And you go in that direction, maybe we get almost, I don't know if we call it jaded by turnover and the fact that, you know, training people does take a long time. It is hard. So it's like, we're just going to keep more people behind the bar. But you do see a little bit more of a revolving door versus you look at that Christmas Eve model with people who are very experienced, able to do more with less people and less time. Mm-hmm. So how can we move from, you know, the six person team to maybe four person team, because that four person team can equal more money for everyone.
A lot of answers to that one. This is a case where I had a client that had six people behind the bar at one point. And for good reasons, baristas will often say the answer to the problem is more baristas. If you say, what do you need? We need more help. And that might be true based on what they know, but there are things you can do to make the station responsibilities and the workflow of your business better. If you want to invest into better throughput, but you've already built your bar, not everybody can afford to actually, you know, break apart their bar and reconfigure it. Mm. But there are some minor changes that baristas themselves, especially your experienced baristas, might be holding on to that they don't feel like, well, we can't. I mean, I'm just going to keep this to myself. But it's a game of incremental progress at the point you have a cafe now that you've built. There are things you can do to make it more efficient and mostly effective. Like that position of point of sale can do probably a few more things if it's trained into that role to do. And you might want to reward that person more for that role. So fewer people doing more things in a better configuration equals, you know, a better throughput, faster ticket times. People get, you know, if you don't have as many people on the bar, they have better tips. They split between people and people like that. But when we went from six to four, it was during Christmas time, around Christmas time. So things were actually picking up, and we experimented by, you know, having this 4-person team on Mondays, which was like slow days, and dripped it out to the rest of the week. People were scared about it, but we decided we were going to reconfigure all the roles, had it all on a spreadsheet. Here's what these people do. Here's the primary responsibility. Here's the tertiary when your primary is not active, right? And the customer's not in front of you. Here's what you do to help your coworkers. And it's all like a game plan, like a professional job, right? Instead, you know what I mean?
What?
And so professionalizing the work and talking about the work and optimizing it as a collective creates these effective moves. And they were thrilled. I mean, they made more tips. They were realized we can do it. We can do more if it's on the line. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I think there is a lot on the table that people just don't realize is there. And they think they need to redo their entire business model or just forget it and do an us versus them thing, like baristas aren't grateful and owners are, you know, megalomaniacs and stuff. So there's that. And some people's answer to this is automation. That's the big elephant in the room. You go on the show floor and you see it like, well, I can have one less barista here and one less barista there. And then they can be freed up to, you know, do whatever to, you know, to the customer, or be like, look weird and creepy at them. Like, I'm just, tell me about your day, you know?
Just to jump in real quick.
No, thanks.
Yeah. No offense to any robotics out there at SCA, but that was one of the pitches, was like, this was literally like Riley puts it on his story, like the robot, like, you know, making the coffee.
Yeah.
And it was like, this is going to free up your staff to truly interact with the guest.
No.
You're just like at the edge of the bar, like.
Like,
yeah. What's your story?
Like, dude, wow. That, what a notion. And we went to, there's a rooftop bar in, at our hotel.
And Flex.
Yeah, it's super cool stuff. And the lady that was making drinks there was just incredible. Like, great with service, very, very knowledgeable.
Thank you, Bri.
Yeah, Bri. Very knowledgeable with drinks. And we were, he ordered some like super obscure drink that
it
nobody
was like, stop. It wasn't like
you
that.
You did. Okay.
He made it up on the spot. And she was like, I know how to make it.
She was one of those like encyclopedia types of just like, you know, she knows everything off the top of her head. And, you know, she took our order. She's making the drink. She's taking the next order while she's making the last drink. She checks us out like flawlessly. We're having a also, she's like asking us what we're doing in town. Like, point is, it was an amazing guest experience.
Checking all the boxes.
It was, and they were busy. And it was just like, she was locked in.
Yeah.
And contrasting that with, oh, like somehow this robot is going to allow you to actually interact with your guest. Mm-mm. Like that makes no sense to me.
Yeah. Some of the worst experiences I think I've ever had has been in places where the most automation exists. Not the show floors where the automation is staffed by world barista champions. No offense to them. You know, companies will hire baristas to work their booth and show what this machine is capable of. But the average use case scenario is not going to, the pitch is, less training, fewer people. What mindset do you think you're in as an owner? It's the abdication of your responsibility to resource your people. And even now it's being reinforced by the idea that technology absolves you even further than you already wanted to absolve yourself. It's hard to find good owners. Y'all are the exception. And I don't mean
thank you,
like,
Chris. Thank you, Chris.
Just like not every barista should be a barista. Not every owner should be an owner, but the opportunity to become an owner of a coffee shop is ever present. And it's easy. It's a low threshold to just open it up. And so there's a lot of fear where people enter into this thing that they have no idea about. You mentioned, I want to have employees. And that's why I laughed a little bit, because I also think that's a wonderful thought to have. But when you ask anybody on these forums online, like owners forums and stuff, like, what's your number one challenge? People.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's always people. Because you're kind of like a camp counselor now. Mm. And it, but every day. And so if that's not what you want to do, then you should have a kiosk that has an automatic machine that makes coffee automatically for people. But once you invite people to be baristas and to work, you've invested in a human business. and the future of coffee is human. And even though there's all this automation out there, it's really not solving coffee shop problems. It's serving hotel lobby problems. It's solving
airport.
Spa problems, airports, right? And even in the airports, there are people that do a fairly good job in some of the airport coffee, not most of them, unfortunately. But, you know, we think that we are doing this for people. And by nature, I think people are kind of lazy and we want the path of least resistance. And I don't think giving owners the idea that you can free the barista up, you still have to train people. You have to hire great people, and great people need to make money and they need to find value and worth in their vocation. And if all they're doing is hanging out and talking to customers while a machine makes coffee, then it loses some of what work is. Work is sacrifice in some ways. I'm spending my energy at work. This is deeper. Like, I think about this a lot, but your identity is somewhat entwined in your vocation. And so that's why baristas see the beauty of the supply chain. They see the urgency and the weight of their responsibility. And then they see the paltry reward because we're innovating automatic espresso machines and we're not innovating business models. And we're biting off more than we can chew because we're building cafes based on marketing and sales and not based on patience and like long-term development. So you don't have to have all the stuff on your menu. So when you start with like 18 sandwiches and 27 syrups and this concept that's just like a laundry list of all the stuff you want to do, that is so hard to pull off, but it's your dream. And because you lack patience and you believe the sales pitch that you need this, you need that, you did it. And now you can't pay people, let alone yourself. So we need to scale back and lean into people more and allow ourselves a longer term development. The ROI might take longer, but it's more sustainable than what we have now, I think.
Yeah, that's all very good. It's kind of just all about putting in the reps. And I mean, you have how many episodes published on your podcast?
I think it's like 850 or something.
Yeah, I mean, how successful numbers wise were the first 50, you know?
Nothing compared to what they are now.
Yeah. So it took a long time to get there. And it's the same deal with our cafes. I mean,
I think that's such an important mindset to stay in at all times is like, we're not there yet.
Yeah.
You know? And I think I honestly thought we were there because of maybe, no offense to anybody, but like the low bar of hospitality and coffee culture, even just in our area. Like people are like, oh, wow, these guys are really nice. And this place is busy. And I'm like, oh, we made it. I feel like that just stunts any sort of growth or sustainability. It's this concept of like, I've made it, you know, but we're in like an ever-changing world. And so to be flexible, to be adaptable. And I know that this is retroactive, but he said, we're lazy. We find the path of least resistance. And I really wanted to say, we are mostly made of water. So that just makes sense. Yes.
Channeling.
Yes.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome. Sorry I had to do that.
So when we look at you know, this more stripped down, maybe 4-person team instead of 6-person, so on and so forth, have you worked with anyone or seen a model where there isn't really leadership and it's a more spread the wealth type of thing?
Decentralized.
And, yeah. One person's ordering the milk. Another person's doing this. Another person's doing this. And then maybe the pay across the board is raised, but there isn't a manager that's making significantly more. Does that ring any bells?
Yes. Temporarily it can work. But it's human nature to look to a singular source of, am I doing a good job? Who is the one that gives me a raise at the end of the day? And do I trust that they see my work? Can they coach me in my work? And if they can, that means they are present with me to see my good and to see my challenges. It's hard to go against the idea of having present authority. Barista work you can have distributed tasks. And to say that there's this cooperative model where, and there are cooperative cafes out there, but they don't last very long. They end up needing somebody to be in charge we look for somebody who's in charge. Yeah. Even with three owners, I'm sure that you experience this where they're like, which owner do I talk to about what thing? Yeah. It's difficult for people because we're constantly seeking this singularity, something a little bit easier for us to be like, just tell me who to talk to. And if it's everybody, then we don't talk to each other. Mm-hmm. And that's not a recipe for success, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So even in cooperative models, there is somebody who makes a decision at the end of the day. Consensus is never 100% in these things. And I'm not knocking anyone who tries to do a cooperative model, you know, of a coffee shop. But I think you have to embrace the idea that somebody has to, the buck has to stop somewhere. And someone has to make a decision. And if it's democratic, then who set up this process to begin with? That's really the figurehead of the business, in my opinion. And it's not saying that that person has to be revered as a god or anything. And people get the wrong idea. They're the chief servant of the people. When you're a leader, you are, what is Simon Sinek says? It's not about being in charge, but it's about
Ross,
the people in your charge, right? Yeah. Serving the people in your charge. Mm-hmm. And that is a lower position. And because it has a little bit more weight on the trajectory of the business, it is rewarded financially. Because we talk about emotional labor, the isolation and loneliness of leadership is a lot of emotional labor. It is hard. We run a coaching group at Keys to the Shop called Keyholder Coaching Groups for owners, like a mastermind of owners who are there to support each other for accountability and things like that. And universally, people are talking about, I can't talk to anybody about these things and have them actually understand what I'm talking about. And owner burnout is a thing. Manager burnout is similar because you get it from both sides. Expectations of the owner, expectations of the barista, even of yourself. You want to do good. So you've got all these things in suspense. Yeah. So I think that it's good to work together. But I don't think it's bad to have a boss. One of the books I recommend all the time is a guy named Bruce Tolgan's book, It's Okay to Be the Boss. He's been on the show like three times. He's got tons of books about lots of things. 27 Challenges Managers Face, you know, How to Manage Your Boss, and It's Okay to Be the Boss. And the owners of this group call it their like boss Bible because it's so simple. But the concept is, it's not about micromanagement. We really don't have micromanagement. What we have is undermanagement. We're not telling people how to do their job, what to do, how to do it, and we're not rewarding them accordingly because we're just not doing the basics, right? So if you're listening and you're in this position of leadership or ownership, you know, get this book. I think it's really good.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah.
We could probably use a read. That is, there's two things that you hit on that I was like, oh, that's a huge pro of being in partnership. And one thing he said, I was like, oh, that's a pretty big con. One a big pro is that like it's really nice being able to talk to these guys about what we're going through and not feel so alone and isolated. So that's a pro to partnership. Mm-hmm. Big con, I was like, I can't even number the times where someone's coming to me needing something, and I'm like, I really need to talk to the guys about this before I make a decision.
Yeah.
And it's because that's even with the whole multi-manager, we have a multi-owner thing going on. And even though we first thing in orientation is talking about, hey, this is Valor. This is who owns it. This is what we do. And this is when you go to this owner for this thing and really try to lay out expectations, but life just happens. And honestly, even like cafe specific questions, even though I'm like the cafe guy, I gotta talk to my guys about it. You know, so that is like I feel like that can be damaging for like a results oriented conversation with someone on the team that like needs something. And I have to like, hey, we have to, I can talk about this in like 10 days after my next owner's meeting when I can talk to the guys. And that can probably create some hesitancy next time to like, you know, bring something forward and talk.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I mean, and so if you want to empower people with clarity, so resource them well and then give them clarity, it means relinquishing some of your right to have kind of collective buy-in and give one person responsibility to make decisions instead of collective decisions at some point. If I could speak to this situation, you know what I mean? Like, if you're in charge of cafes, then a quick response based on the fact that you know what the values are, you know what the response should be, rather than saying, I need to talk to the guys, and then definitely gaining some thought in the barista's mind, like, I would rather not bring it up because I know I'm not going to, you know, it's not going to get back to me. It'd be better for you to just make that decision, but it requires changing the way the structure works on top and empowering somebody to have the presence to solve the problem quicker, so that feedback culture can continue to grow, and consensus culture and the ownership can shrink. Does that make sense?
Mm. Yeah. Whoa. We're getting free consulting right now.
I know. I was about to say, I'm glad we got to con you out of an hour of consulting over this podcast. Yeah. I think overarching theme to a lot of this is that we're talking about trying to lay things out whenever people come on, you know, about where to go with what topic or whatever.
Yeah.
Same deal with wages, and on, it's on both sides. I think a lot of times that where things can happen, you know, sitting down with the barista and being like, what do you want? What do you expect out of this? What do you expect to be able to get out of this? And then have that number in mind. And then, like you were saying with one of your guests that you've had with the super transparent model.
Yeah.
You know, there's that. And then like having those very firm check-in dates about someone being able to go up in hourly at an annual review. So remembering that, but I guess another question I have to pose is how many baristas are actually asking for raises rather than letting it like fester and like being like, oh, I'm not gonna get paid more
now than before. I think the festering had reached a climax at the point where they had the great resignation, where now it's the people are saying it's hard to find good help, and you know, people are not wanting to work because they realized there wasn't much in it for them, or they didn't want to do it. And by the way, as a side, you know, a lot of owners stop being owners, not just because they couldn't be anymore, but because they realized I didn't really want to do this anyway.
Yep. It's like, and on all sides.
Yeah.
Wow.
So now you've got a lot more people that are doing a sort of like assertiveness training approach where they're saying, here's how you get ahead in your career. There are lots of people online in podcast episodes, et cetera, that are teaching people, here's how you can get ahead in your career. Instagram accounts are that are focusing on this. And so more baristas are actually asking for raises and figuring out how to leverage what they can offer a business. And that's great. And it's almost a little shocking for some owners. They're like, hey, wait a second. You're offering me stuff and I'm supposed to be the one, like, you know, giving you all the opportunity. And I love it. I love the idea that they know what value they can bring. And so now it's a real negotiation, right? If you want the barista to feel like you have their best interest in mind, okay, again, have that transparency thing. Say, here's what we can do. I want you as a person to thrive as much as possible here in this limited expression of your personality. This is not the end all be all of who you are as a person. And sometimes people get that confused. They say, well, you know, I am worth more than that, but your work isn't, you see. Again, it's not who you are. We are dictating the terms of what your work here is worth in this context.
Yeah.
And so if we're all on the same page, it's not about you as a person who are of eternal worth and value, et cetera. It is, in this coffee shop, you are a barista, and this role has this value, regardless of who holds it. And that's what we've thought through, and this is what you're signing up for. And so it's up to us to take the step as leaders to allow that platform to people who might let it fester, allow them to feel free to talk about things that are happening in their head and in their heart about the work. Other people will be assertive and they'll come up and they'll talk to you about it and that they kind of did the work for you. And that's good. This is why I advocate one-on-ones as a institution in a cafe that is not a performance review. It is not an agenda-driven thing. It is simply a, Riley, how's it going? and I just listen to you. Yeah. I just, it's not even just a check in and be like, high five, you know, you're everything killing good? It, bro. Right. Yeah. Everything is always good when you ask that question. Yeah.
It's all good.
Somehow.
Yeah.
It's like the server that comes to the table. Everything tasting good. And you're like, yeah, sure.
Yeah. We call those health checks. We do them monthly, in our cafes. I mean, actually throughout the whole company.
Finally did something Chris suggested.
Yeah.
Thank God.
Yeah. So especially these guys and him have been awesome about that since the beginning of just really being on top of scheduling that out and sitting down with people for an hour every month and just getting to the bottom of some stuff. And it's not even like probably most of the time, not really about work, right?
Yeah.
It's just like just knowing the person. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a building trust that we were talking about, you know, just humans being human. And a lot of it ends up being like growth oriented, just either in their life, like what, cause I mean, we're catching most baristas are oftentimes in such a transient space. They're in between things. They just graduated from this, or they just dropped out of this, or they just quit this and they're going to do that.
Yeah.
Or they're like just starting, like, I want to be in coffee for a long time. So they want to move into something else, at least in our experience. So it's such a lifeline to have someone to talk to like that and be like, hey, where are you at in this? What's going on?
This sounds like a lot of work for somebody who's not going to be around for very long. And that's why people don't invest into that, because they're just going to leave. And the pushback on that, not that you're asking, but I'm just saying, like, the pushback to this idea that I do hear a lot is that you're getting better at creating a institutional wisdom in your business that will allow people to onboard into efficiency and effectiveness quicker by investing what you do in these people. Yeah, they might leave. Maybe they'll have a harder time leaving, and that'll buy you some months. It might buy you years with some people. And I've known people that said, I was going to, but, and I like working here. I actually am making enough money. I went into a barista in New York City at Ken Nye's place, 9th Street Espresso. He's been a barista there for like 15 years. Wow. Loves his life. Is he making money hand over fist? Not necessarily, but he's making enough to do well, and he's comfortable, and he knows he's valued, and he has a family, and he's in Manhattan. It's a living, right?
Yeah.
But he knows they have his best interest in mind. And the thing is, if you don't invest that time to figure out who you are as a business through your training of people, you're always going to be behind the eight ball when it comes to how long it takes to get somebody up. That example you gave of having the all-star team or whatever on that, you know, what was it, Christmas Eve?
Yeah.
Yeah. 2 years from now, 3 years from now, more of that kind of person will be there. Maybe not because you've invested more training, but because you're just the culture itself breeds that into people faster, and you're better at selecting people who have the character traits that latch on to that. And that's the other thing, is we don't talk about hiring people for the things that we want them to do very well from the beginning. And we almost hire people based on, we think they're cool, but do we know that they have the values and the potential to live into the ideals of that role that we've seen? So that day is like okay, can the next person we hire do that? Have they got a track record of doing that other places? And now you don't have to spend as much money on training and onboarding. You can get them up to speed faster. And that allows you, again, that smaller team to be more effective. So there's a lot going on here, but there's no excuse to just throw your hands up in the air and say, oh, screw it. We're just going to burn through people. You know, baristas are lazy and we are taken advantage of, and that's it.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that we're trying is something that Will Schertz from Methodical was talking to us about when he was on our podcast while back. It's this notion of pay bands. I'm sure there's a ton of different words for that, but simply you start at one rate, and through a series of milestones, like we were talking about the check-ins earlier, you can increase your wage per hour.
Yeah.
And you know, the top end of that pay band, you know, maybe for us it's $14 or $15 an hour. To call that a professional barista is sort of a funny thing to me, because it's not funny in a negative sense, but just interesting that usually a lot of times when people get raises, it's because they have additional responsibility added to their plate.
Yes.
But that's not being like ordering the milk is not being a barista. It's ordering the milk.
Hmm.
And so the whole concept of being a professional barista is that you are so good at the physical act of being a barista that you are making the company more money per hour and getting more return customers, whether that's through drinks or service or all that combined together, that you get a raise. And so it's a different thing than just like, hey, you know what? You've been doing a great job as barista. We're going to start sticking your nose in the laptop and let you order everything. And like, how you got your career in as a barista. That's not being a barista.
You're doing such a good job. Here's more money. Stop doing your job.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Okay.
And so, and this is sort of where this Christmas Eve, it's not all about Christmas Eve, but you know, that was a good example of something that we've seen a lot. You know, it was just like a sort of emblematic moment.
Yeah, it was like, but it was a lot of people behind bar who do admin work, right? Like, or there was a couple or a few or whatever.
Sure.
And it's like, what if these people weren't doing admin work all the time and they were always out there crushing it and dishing out drinks? Because it's not even that we were making drinks really fast, but it was like the guests were telling them, like, you guys are doing amazing. Yeah. This place is crazy. Mm. Like verbatim. So,
and we've seen that be really resonant in our, there's this one Instagram reel. I think it was a reel. I don't remember if it was a reel or just the podcast that we released. It was talking about this of like, you love being a barista. So you start a coffee shop or you become a manager and then you never get to do it again. And you sit in your coffee shop that you made and you're just on your computer.
Yeah. Yeah. There is something here that's a little bit like this invisible force with these people. You said they're admin, and this is actually true of the U.S. Barista Championships as well. Often workaday baristas, you'd be hard pressed to find a world champion who is a barista, like regular barista.
Yeah.
Isaiah Shees at Archetype still works the bar because he wants to, and it's his place, and he works it regularly. He was closing right before he came here, so he's like the anomaly. But a lot of them are admin type of people, and they have such a professional presence about themselves because that's what the world says professional work is. And so when they get back on the bar, not only do they have an air of pride in themselves because they've reached some kind of legitimate professional level of, you know, even if it's boring work, they're also fresher than the baristas who are just carpal tunnel and, you know, stained and callous and all this stuff. It's easy to work a shift if you haven't just been crushed by shifts.
Yeah.
Not to take anything away from the people, but you telling me that was just like, oh, interesting. I thought maybe that they were just like the regular workaday baristas that were on there. Mm. But that says something about helping our staff have margins and paid vacations and investment into their professional development beyond just sling the spro, dude. Just make it. How are we teaching people about hospitality? Are we sending them to camps and events and even things outside of coffee to talk about communication and treating them as professionals? Because that air will give them a grounding where the crush of the rush will not crush them because they have some root in themselves rather than just trying to survive the shift. Mm. And I can survive any shift if I know that I don't actually have to do the clopin the next day or whatever. And I'm going to be fully present and that's really cool. I did a really good job, but how can we make the workaday baristas work more professional? And it might mean back, just going on a tangent here, but the idea that there is a longer or return on the investment. Do less with better people, with higher profits, and then grow as you get those people as you invest into those people, you can add menu items, you can add services and things like that. But people start too big with too long of hours, and they don't have enough bandwidth themselves to invest into their people. Mm. And everyone knows it. So we're all just trying to survive here. And most people feel sorry for leaders because they look like they're going to lose their mind anytime. We all feel like we're going to lose our mind. So where's the margin here? How is this healthy?
Mm. Mm. That's a really good, compassionate perspective to keep in mind. I heard this when I was like 15 and it hasn't left my mind. One of my friends was working at Chick-fil-A and he was having to make the lemonade and squeeze the lemons. And he was doing this for like 2 hours or something. And, you know, at this point his hands are really sore and stained and like burning from acid. And the manager comes back. He's like, you're going so slow, man. Look how fast I can do it. And he just like pumps it out, you know, for 30 seconds. He's like, you got to be doing it like this. And he like leaves and you're like, whoa. That I never want to have that as like an owner or a manager. Like I walk behind the bar and it's crazy. I'm like, what are you guys doing? Yeah. Look how fast. Look how many shots I can make. Look how many drinks I can do right now. Look, I just took 5 orders. All right. I got to go.
Yeah. Go.
The rush is dead now.
Lacks empathy.
Yeah.
And what is he doing? He is fearful for his job because the metrics that determine his success as a manager don't have to do with the health of his employees necessarily, because it's hard to track that. How the labor percentage is what they track. I don't know, Chick-fil-A, I'm just guessing, but there's numbers. And it's harder to walk into a place and see, oh, people are happy. Okay, that's like gravy on top, right? So right. How can we make it at least at the same level? There was a guy who wrote a book, Greg McKeown. He wrote a book called Essentialism, and also a book called Effortless. And these are like New York Times bestsellers. And he's like this guy that is all about the philosophy of taking care of yourself in work. And he told this story of this race across Antarctica between two teams. And I'm going to mangle this, but basically there was one team that was taking every waking minute to get as far as they could until they collapsed. And they were going to beat this. They were going to win this race. And so they hardly slept. They would just push themselves. The captain would push the team. But another team said, we're only going to go a certain number of miles per day. And then we're going to rest. And that's it. And they were behind until the group that was pushing themselves completely burned out, started to get like gangrene and other weird things, right? And this group was like just fresh as a rose. And they beat the record whatever that record was. They were amazed to see how far ahead they were. They were sleeping. And they were like working hard on the other team, but these guys were sleeping and taking care of themselves. So business models that prioritize, we need to be making like tons of profit every single day at every single hour. Like Chick-fil-A is closed on Sunday and they're doing just fine.
Yeah.
That works miracles for the staff. Like that's an actual day off that people do have, and you can't work on that day because the business isn't open. So my friend Cabell Tice runs a place called Orchard Coffee in Waynesville, North Carolina. And sometimes they'll just close the shop. They live above the shop, and him and his family, and they just need a break. His mom works in the shop and his kids, you know, wants to be with his kids. And that's it. They just close the shop. Now, that doesn't make sense to a lot of people who are just like, but then you're not making money. Well, yeah. What are you really doing this for? Because if you got into coffee for making money, I mean, not really it's happening.
Kind of why we're having this podcast right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good. That's all such good insight. I think we're coming to a close here, but I definitely could talk for another hour. I'm losing my voice.
Are you sure?
But
because
you could listen for another hour.
I could at least listen and shake my head. Yes. But thank you so much for doing this with us. We really appreciate it. And you have given us some good things to take home.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Yes. Thank you, Chris.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Where are your platforms for our people to follow you?
Yeah. Thank you. So keystotheshop.com is the website, @keystotheshop on Instagram and on LinkedIn. It's just Chris DeFerio. Also, Keys to the Shop is on LinkedIn as well. I kind of try to do both. Trying to get some YouTube content up there, and that's at Keys to the Shop also. And feel free to DM me. Email's chris@keystotheshop.com.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'll just say off this this conversation, it sounds like this consulting is worth its weight in gold.
Already. Yeah, 100%.
So, joke. Yeah, awesome. Someone came up to us today and asked if we did it. And if you're listening right now, I found someone that you should go to.
Yeah, we found the rest. Don't worry about it. Yeah. We got to figure out our own stuff first.
Yes. Yeah. But hey, I'll plug myself on your program, Valor Coffee Podcast.
Come on.
Spotify or Apple Podcasts or whatever. At Valor Coffee on YouTube, at Valor.coffee on Instagram. It's our main one. We got so many accounts. At Valor Coffee Podcast on Instagram as well. We split them up.
And guys, you can listen to both podcasts. Don't feel like you don't have to on either side.
Listen
of
to this same episode twice.
Twice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll be easy.
On both platforms, please.
Yeah.
And this is SCA cast too. So I just want to say how much fun it was to meet so many of our listeners.
Yeah.
At SCA. Gosh. And just the courage is the wrong word, but just the, I guess, confidence and boldness and just ease that people had just to come up to us and like, hey, I listen to your podcast. I think it's awesome. And it really means a lot because, you know, I'm sure you can relate to this to some degree, but doing a podcast, like we're just in this room by ourselves. Yeah. So, you know, and
the crowd's not going wild right now.
Yeah, right. It's not a live thing.
The ice machine's just going wild.
Right. Right. So meeting all of you was truly refreshing. And I just want to say thank you to everyone who came to our little booth at Third Wave Water and drank some of our coffee. So yeah, it was a beautiful time.
Yeah. It would seem hard to be annoyed by that, you know? Like,
oh, never.
It's
man.
So sweet and encouraging. So
The feedback is always a blessing for sure. Because it's you just put it out into the ether and people are listening and that's wonderful.
And no one threw anything at us like out of anger.
Hey, maybe they missed.
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, we still got tonight.
I always said, but shout out Prequel for hosting us.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you, Annabelle.
We came here this morning and it was phenomenal.
Yes.
I kid you not. It was phenomenal. It was a wonderful experience.
Yeah.
The whole team.
Yeah.
Stacked.
All right. We'll catch you all in the next one.